Blog Talk Radio.
The All About You show is brought to you in part by Vera Heart Coaching and Mindscape, the art of transformation.
Hello and welcome to the All About You show. Today is Thursday, October 1st. Rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. How did it get to be October already? It feels more like winter out there today. I'm so excited to have on one of my most favorite people to interview. I've interviewed him several times on another show. It is the mind-blowing Sam Maranto, who is the Illinois State Director of MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO organization that, and he's an investigative researcher for MUFON, as well as being the state director for Illinois. Sam, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Karen. It's so good to talk to you again.
Oh, I can't tell you how excited I am. I have been thrilled ever since I saw you on the 19th. It's like, oh, please, 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 you know. Although I didn't have to beg, which was very nice. Thank you for not making me grovel to have you, to ask you to be my guest.
Anytime.
I do appreciate that. You know, I'm not below groveling, just so you know, but I do appreciate that you didn't make me do that. So, Sam, you have been involved in the UFO phenomena for a very long time. How did you get started?
Well, on a personal level, I had my first sighting of something that I felt was truly anomalous. Back in 1959 near Fox Lake, when I was at my uncle's cottage, I was playing around by a channel in the backyard, skipping rocks across the water just like a little boy would do, getting in all sorts of trouble. And all of a sudden, there was this brilliant illumination, this sphere that flew over my right shoulder. And it went over into another yard, went up and back of a, willow tree. And it went up and it disappeared. And for some time, I had either blacked out or something happened, but it startled me, something severe. Then my aunt came back there and was calling me, and it was dark out. It had gotten dark. Apparently, some time had passed, and that really startled me. I have no idea what transpired at that moment, but some unusual events did take place afterwards and for some period of time. That was my interest in this phenomena, and quite possibly this phenomena having an interest in me. Now, it may very well have been some lightning ball or some piezoelectric discharge, looking at it from a scientific point of view. Either way, it was unidentified. It was floating, flying, and it appeared to be an object that was an luminescent sphere. Now,
right.
How my interest really peaked into UFOs was my father came home one day. I heard him talking in the kitchen, and he was talking to my mother about this client of his. He was a music teacher, so he went in, I believe it was in Palos Park, and they were amateur astronomers. He went over to the house, rang the doorbell, wife answered the phone and said, oh, they're in the backyard. So the son and the husband are in the backyard looking at something up in the sky. And he gets back out there and he says, well, you just missed them. And he goes, what was that? He goes, these things were flying all over the place, but where are they? He says, and all of a sudden they're starting to explain what UFOs were. And he says, well, I don't even know what you're talking about. So they went inside, they started explaining it. They gave him a magazine and a book. In fact, the magazine and the book were sitting in front of me. And little did they know that these people just gave him a book and a magazine, but in reality, they gave me the adventure of a lifetime. Because
oh, wow.
It was, yeah, I mean, right after that very year, I gave my first talk on the subject of UFOs, and I believe it was either my sixth or seventh grade class. And I think I've been giving a talk on it at every school event or wherever I had a chance to talk about the subject. I've talked about it. And as you know, I've appeared on pretty much every show pertaining to this and every major channel and cable station and et cetera.
Right.
So, you know, it really was neat doing Dateline NBC, 10 best UFO cases that have been photographed, and that was really an honor. Working as a consultant for UFO Hunters and a few other television shows. It's been an adventure, both in the media point of view and getting the information out and meeting people who have had genuine encounters of phenomena. So
That's
touching. When I came to MUFON, I got into MUFON in 97. I took an interest. I was, I had a radio show up in on WAIT some years back, and I was riding back from the station, and I turned the radio on and flipped around and was listening to some other shows, and they started talking about this UFO sighting in Tinley Park, or New Lenox. And so I immediately went to the gentleman's location. He was a businessman, and started to interview him because I was doing independent research, as you know, long before I joined MUFON. And so I took an interest in his case, and MUFON was there also investigating the very next day. So I met the assistant state director at that time, Bill Leone, and Sue Morawski. And you met Bill down at Star of Rock. He was talking about this very event in 97.
Right.
That's how we met, and he encouraged me to become a member. And from that point on, you know, the rest is history as far as that goes. So
that's incredible. Now, going back to when you were a kid playing at your aunt and uncle's, and you had said that your aunt was calling you and it was dark, did you lose time?
Something happened there, Karen, that scared the bejesus out of me, because when I came home, it was on a Sunday. It was late in the afternoon. Later afternoon I came home. It was evening. And I believe it was 7 o'clock. And it would have been around this time of the year, maybe even a little later. Could have been like October-ish, September, October-ish. And what had happened is on Sunday, as you recall back in 1959,
I wasn't around yet.
Oh, you weren't around yet. Yeah, you wouldn't have known then. That's right. You're just a babe. So
I wasn't even born yet, honey. I don't think I was a flicker in anybody's eye at that point in time.
Well, there you go. Well, you wouldn't have remembered
then.
So I really don't even know how old you are, strangely enough. But
I'm 2 years older than dirt, but was not around for the 1959 incident.
Okay, there you go. So here we are. You know, this thing, of all things, it scared me. I'm in the house. My mother's asking me when I walk in the door, are you going to watch Dennis the Menace? Well, I wouldn't have missed it unless I was pretty scared. I was that scared. I went into the bedroom, crawled in bed, just covered my head up, and I was quiet about this for many years. I think I was in my 20s before I even mentioned the incident to anybody. There were some other odd occurrences that happened soon afterwards that made me wonder that maybe there was far more to this than just some, you know, ball lightning or something like that.
Right, or a weather balloon. Chinese lanterns, or...
Oh, Chinese lanterns are the new plague these days.
Yeah.
Those are a real
that
pain in the
me
butt
up.
For me.
Yeah, no. I can imagine. Speaking of something really old, I had the honor, as you know, because you were there, to meet and listen to Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr., the late Jesse Marcel Jr. Truly a phenomenal individual. And could you share a little bit about his story before we go on to some local, you know, stuff that's going on in Illinois, real quick? Because this to this day, it still floors me. And this goes back to the Roswell incident.
Jesse Marcel Jr. was the son of I believe he was major. Was he a major at that time? Or colonel? Colonel major. I forgot what his position was. But in fact,
mm-hmm.
Jesse himself was I think he was lieutenant major.
Mm-hmm.
Or colonel, lieutenant colonel is what he was a doctor and a lieutenant colonel. But his father.
In the Air Force, right?
He was in the Air Force, so was his father.
Okay.
He grew up, he was stationed over there. The father was stationed in Roswell, New Mexico, with the Elite 509 bomb unit, which is the only atomic bomb unit in the world. There was no other bomb unit, and atomic bomb unit. And the gentleman, Jesse Marcel Jr., was also a chief investigator for incidences at the facility, at the Roswell 509 facility. And
the son was after this incident?
The father.
Okay, the father was. Okay.
Yes. So, as you know, during the event of around July the 7th, he was called out to examine some debris on Mac Brazel's farm over there, and he goes out there on the ranch, and sure enough, he picks up this unusual debris. I mean, it's a large debris field, not very much unlike something that would be related to a any type of balloon debris field. Regardless how much garbage you put on it, it was just quite a bit. Plus, it left an indentation in the ground. The sheep wouldn't go near it. They wouldn't go around it. They would go around it. They wouldn't go through the debris field. So there are all these other odd aspects to it. But he brought pieces of this debris home before he went to the airbase. And his son, Jesse Marcel Jr., who we had the privilege to meet, at our event, he was there. He woke him up, and he actually not just touched, but really had a chance to thoroughly examine the details of what he held in his hands. One piece was much like foil that would, once you crumple it up, it would spring back to its original position
mm-hmm.
and shape, which was really like a memory metal and much lighter than aluminum. Then the next thing was an I-beam, and I think he showed you his version of what it would look like, and the inscriptions in there that appeared to be, to him, looked something like a hieroglyphics or something, and
mm-hmm.
it was an iridescent blue. The metal was lighter than aluminum. It was much lighter. And there was other various debris that he had that he was able to examine. That debris was taken to the airfield. It was examined. It was put through some tests. And it was very unusual. All of it was very unusual.
Right. Well, the newspapers at the time reported flying saucer over Roswell, crash in, I don't remember the, and I know you just said it, the gentleman's farm field where it crashed at, and all of the papers were calling it a flying saucer. And
yeah, in fact,
there's
the,
a very famous picture of Major or Corporal or Jesse Marcel, right? That
yes.
The government. Because all the papers were calling it a flying saucer, then the government made him make a statement. Correct me if I'm wrong. The government made him make a statement that said it was a flying weather balloon. And there's the famous picture of Major, we'll just call him Major, Marcel. But in the photo that's taken, he's holding in his hand a piece of paper. And what is that piece of paper? Do you know?
Yeah, the paper was actually a memo that was to the airfield in Texas. So, I mean, and now we have the technology to read it, and there's detail specifically stating things about crash and bodies and the items that wouldn't be associated with the debris field of
right.
a skyhook balloon or any balloons that they said it was related to. In fact, the balloon, the very balloon that they were talking about was accounted for. And I don't know what, you know, why they come up with such nonsense. This is the most elite air group at that time, and they saw weather balloons on a daily basis out
right.
there. They knew where they were all over the place. They knew what
right.
they were. Even these exotic ones with the material, basically to collect radiation
right.
for tests. See if there was testing going on in Russia. But that had nothing. That was not what was being seen. It had
right.
nothing to do with what was going on. The secrecy and everything else that surrounded it. Of course, now we've had volumes of deathbed confessions of people coming forward telling of their own experience handling this debris and their involvement in keeping it a secret. So,
right,
you know,
and we're talking air. We are talking military people coming forward
oh,
on
yes.
their deathbed,
but,
right?
Oh,
but
sure.
if I remember correctly, once the image was blown up and we were able to read the memo to Major Marcel, that it also had stated the orders were given to tell John Q. Public, because this was his interview with the newspaper, but he was at the top of the memo is where he was directed to say that it was in fact a weather balloon, and then the rest of it had, you know, all the information about the bodies. That, well, at least that's how I remember it. Maybe I made it up in my head. I don't know. Is that what you recall as well?
Well, General Rainey basically coached him on what he had to do. He went into the room.
Right.
The debris was scattered. It was laying out there. And
right.
he was really very upset about it, about the goings on. And, when Mr. Brazel came back with a new truck and didn't want to talk about the details, I guess one of the lines was, you know, they talk about little green men. And he would say, well, they're not green.
Yeah. They were gray, I think. Yeah,
so,
see, I was absolutely, I mean, that's more in-depth information than I had ever heard on the Roswell crash. And I got to hear it from somebody who was actually physically a part of the crash via his father on their way back to the base, stopping by the home and running in and saying, look what we found, look what we found, you know, because
yeah.
protocols were very different, you know, than they are today. And, you know, so to hear, I think he was, Jesse Marcel Jr. was like 10 years old at the time when Roswell happened. 11 or 12. So, you know,
yeah.
old enough to have it make that big of an impact on
oh.
the rest of his life.
Absolutely. He knew there was something significant about this. And then the other thing was the way everything was hushed up, and that is, you know, his father basically told him to forget about it, you know, blah, 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 et cetera. The other thing is he's had so many encounters through his own experiences trying to get this information out. He's very straightforward on explaining, you know, telling everybody the details of what he encountered, what was going on, and that, you know, it wasn't anything conventional. He doesn't really make any more detail about seeing the bodies or himself, because he didn't. He tells
right.
you the truth. He tells you exactly what he was, his involvement, who he knew what was involved with what, his father's statements, and limited it only to that. The man, to the last days of his dying breath, was a great patriot. And, you know, he was still active in the Gulf War. He was a medic out there and a doctor out there.
Wow.
He was a very prominent man. He also talked about his experience dealing with some extremely high-level people in the Pentagon who basically revealed the fact that, yes, you know, this phenomenon is genuine, these things are real, and that we can't really and that, you know, there's a great degree of secrecy. And I asked him if he was being bothered by anybody, and that if anybody were to bother him about this, you know, any threats or whatever, that there was somebody he was to contact. Now, to the best of my knowledge, he never had any threats or any details or anything like that. But
right.
The same token, he was very candid about what he saw and didn't speculate on anything well beyond that. And I think that's
right.
Very, very grounded in the mannerism that he brought this information out.
Absolutely, because it was pure truth, you know, and...
Well, he was only speaking as far as he knows, that's it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. He, from his own personal experience, he didn't make up anything about anything beyond what he knew, didn't speculate on anything. He was just very, very forward on what he saw physically and what he had, and then he had something made to show people what it looked like. And it was very, very interesting man to be able to listen to him speak, number one, as he shared his personal experiences. And I know everybody with regard to MUFON are very sad at the loss of Jesse Marcel Jr. I had another really quick... Oh, Star Wars, right? And I don't mean the movie franchise. It was reported that Ronald Reagan, when he was an actor, I think before he ran for governor, and Nancy Reagan were going to a party at Bill Holden's house and were abducted by aliens. Do you know that story?
Nope, not at all.
Okay. Well,
Ronald Reagan had I think he had two sightings, one for sure.
Uh-huh.
And one was in a plane, I don't know which plane it was, I don't know if it was Air Force One. The other one was in, I forgot where, but I think he had two sightings.
Right.
You know, prominent people, many people who held the office of president have at some point privileged information, but not as much
sure.
as you would think. And I think
right.
that privilege stopped probably at about Eisenhower, though I think Bush had quite a bit of knowledge because he was director of the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, I don't think too many people are in the office of president get much privilege. Reagan, on the other hand, I think because of two things, his celebrity prior to that, and he was just a likable type of guy, that there may have been more openness. And the fact that he had his own experiences, I think, may have gained
mm-hmm.
some latitude, too, you know, on some
yep.
issues.
Jimmy Carter, as well, has had experiences.
He filed a report. Mm-hmm.
Right.
He did.
You know, I was going to say, with regard to Reagan, some say that's why we have the Star Wars program in place. It was encounter, but,
I guess,
you know.
And that speculation, but, you know, there's other speculation, and supposedly there were people present hearing the comment that, you know, at the airing of, I don't know if it was E.T. or Close Encounters, I don't know which movie, but Spielberg, and they had the special showing, and the president was in a room, and he had leaned over to someone, I don't know if it was Spielberg or who it was, but they said somebody overheard him saying there are only a few people in the room that know this is actually true.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Well, then again, the movie Close Encounters was based, Spielberg had a tremendous amount of information.
Mm-hmm. Spielberg's
Holly
an alien, I think.
you know, I just still want to be in one of his movies. I just want to be in one of his movies. And
that would be fun.
I would love to be in one of his movies. And you know that Jacques Vallée, the character in Close Encounters, Jacques Vallée, was the Frenchman in reality. You know, Lachaume, I believe, was his name. But the the funny thing is, Jalen Hynek cameoed in that movie, and Jalen Hynek and both Jacques Vallée were consultants on the movie, and they
wow.
were a crucial part of that making of the movie. And
wow.
Recently, somebody just, you know, I always get people who had sightings, they'll say, and they'll refer to Close Encounters. You know, it looked like, you know, that one object when it's coming around the mountain, it looked kind of like that or this, that. They'll use
wow.
reference points. But, and I find that interesting that it's used as a reference point, as a reference, is identifying or similar to, or did you know that? And that's the only way to communicate something. When you have such an unusual experience, you have to have some sort of reference.
Right.
And that comes up, strangely enough. So.
Right. What's the population percentage, do you think, believe that we are not alone in the universe?
Believe and know are two different things.
Mm-hmm. Well, right, because you can't really know unless you experience, right?
Right. Faith means to take on faith. The other thing
mm-hmm.
is, I think analytical deduction, a rational
right.
analytical deduction, which is substantially higher than belief, I would say anybody with a objective and learned worldly view has already come to that deduction. There
right.
are other people, course, that are just, they have to stay within the scope of their prejudice, if it's a for what belief, some arrogance or whatever. But when you look at the infinite, you know, the infinite infinite universe,
right.
and the potential of multiverses, you know, when we start thinking of the potential of multiple dimensions, and that component was something for very hard for me to grasp and actually take into consideration.
Right.
Now I'm thoroughly convinced because of certain cases that I worked on in 2004. I've been dragged into that realm, and I'm rather certain, you know, that these things do exist, that we have multiple universes, that whatever these things are, have the ability to manipulate one way or another what may be dimensions or some other component of our sense of reality that we have no clue about.
Right.
So as a percentile, again, speculation-wise, anybody with a working brain, an objective working brain, probably has made the deduction that we're not alone, period.
Right. Well, I'm still waiting for my mothership. You know, I think I was dropped here, and I think I was being punished, and I was sent here. I keep saying I'm going to write a book, Time Out, and as often as time that I say that, somebody else is going to write it before I actually get the chance. But, you know, in my own personal opinion, is that this can't be it in the grand universe, and we keep exploring it further and further. They just found water on Mars, you know, which is unbelievable. And, you know, and the further our technology grows, the more we learn, but really the less we know, because we're not at that point yet. So, you know, I don't think that, you know, we're all that is in the entire vastness of the universe, and even considering, you know, multi-universes, you know. So that's where I stand on it, and I'm hugely interested in this phenomena. Now, locally, we've had, in the state of Illinois, some really popular sightings, and for anybody who's clicked the link, there was one where it's a great big old hole in the cloud cover, and we'll talk about what that is in a moment. But let's talk about, we're coming up on the 11th anniversary of Tinley Park. What happened in Tinley Park? Almost 11 years ago.
It's going to be 11 years. So The first sighting was already 11 years. That was August 21st of 2004 at 9-something in the evening. People were noticing configuration of three red illuminations in the sky. There was no...
Like triangular shape or left to right or...
This is the best way to do it. If you take your thumb and your index finger and your middle finger and just spread them apart and make like a Y, that's an isosceles triangle. Now...
Right. Gotcha.
If you had an illumination, a light, an illumination at each point, and you couldn't see anything else in between, and you maneuver it around, you'll see that it's going to take on various lines, various perspectives. And those perspectives, even though they're different, do not violate those perspectives of the actual triangular form.
Okay.
It's just your individual perspective. Now,
right.
How we're able to get, now why this case is so good is because we had multiple people with video cameras seeing at the same time. Luckily, we had other events taking place that were keenly noted the motions. Many cameras were correctly set where the time was correct. So we're able to cue this stuff from various perspectives, see simultaneously right next to each other the footage, and deduce that there is something here that is locked in time-space controlling these illuminations. In other words, if it's a body between everything or an energy source, there is something locking in time-space the three illuminations.
Okay.
Now, the thing is, I have people watch this. They say, oh, I see three illuminations, there's three lights, and that's it. Well, you look at a plane coming in for a landing at a distance from a couple thousand feet away. All you're going to see is lights at night. You're not going to see the fuselage. You're not going to see foils. You're not going to see wings. You're not going to see anything else. You're not going to see the landing wheels, or you won't be seeing the pilot sitting in there waving to you. You're not going to see it.
Or flipping you off, you know.
Yeah, flipping off, saying, come on, I'm here, but you can't see me. And
But the lights are also blinking, on an airplane, white and red. You can see they blink. They're not a solid lit light.
But no, these things are solid. Oh, on the lights on the port and starboard side, plus the tail light and the landing lights are solid. White in the configuration on a plane, and port would be your red, and then starboard side would be your green. And then, of course, a large white light in the back. Now, those are your normal configuration.
Right.
Now they
have
different configurations, and you have the options of adding more lights, especially the strobing lights. And those strobing lights are usually you don't usually put them on until you're going to be landing.
Right.
But the thing is, the configurations. We know the configurations. Many of the witnesses, and the witnesses, we've had thousands of witnesses. This wasn't even hundreds of witnesses. It was thousands of witnesses. I've personally interviewed over 200. And I couldn't even count. Probably over 200 have come up to me since then. So the thing is, this was a event that was seen over a large area, not just here. It was seen, they were seen all over the world. And this isn't a single event of this similar type of object. This object's been seen for some period of time and recorded during that period of time, 72 hours before, 72 hours afterwards, is the way I like to have an investigation. If I'm going to have a scope of time where I'm doing an investigation and considering it part of that investigation, We had sightings in British Columbia, Ohio. We had down in Houston, Texas the next day. Iowa the very evening. And then we had that very evening, or excuse me, the 19th, we had an object over Minneapolis, St. Paul, sitting in the sky for 7 hours, sitting there for 7 hours at approximately 30,000 feet in the air. And it just sat there. And thousands of people are watching this stupid thing.
And that's a Chinese lantern.
And it's a big Chinese lantern.
Is it Saturn? Are they looking at Saturn or Venus? Maybe it was Venus.
Yeah, Venus in the atmosphere. People saying that.
Yeah, right.
Got people saying this stuff. They're saying it had to be a weather balloon. A weather balloon sitting perfectly still, and it was, what, 39 wind or something like that? No, we have all the statistics. We have all the information. The object was about 600 feet in diameter. From the calculations that we're able to figure out. Now,
that's a big lantern.
Oh, that's the biggest one. I don't know if they sell those in Michigan or what, but I got to get one.
I'm telling you, I'd like that in my backyard.
And you saw
know?
The footage of what was going on in Arizona that evening, very same night. You saw that footage.
Oh, yes.
They're saying, somebody said, oh, it's a fire on the mountain. Nah, get out of here. We have the daylight footage. I know the place. I know the exact location. I know the person who shot that.
The thing about the Phoenix sighting and why it didn't look like a fire in the mountain is because fire moves. You know?
Yeah.
If fire doesn't stay steady, fire moves and it jumps and, you know, and it's not necessarily
it's not
in the
color.
Shape of a ball. You know what I mean?
No.
Look at a
no,
candle
it's a
flame.
Ball. In fact, you know what? There was a guy from, I think he worked at NASA for many years, and he had retired. He was with a big contractor. And this guy would attend a lot of our events. And one day he broke his silence, and he says, Sam, before I left NASA, we were studying plasma energy propulsion. He says, what I'm looking at here is a plasma energy. My next question is, what type of device is inside there creating that? Because it takes a lot of juice to create that. And I go, I would love to know. I would love to know.
Right.
So,
exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean,
no, that's yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to see anything like that, you know. I really, really would. Now, what I find interesting, we got about 20 minutes left, all right, and I want to touch on, there's so much to talk with you about. Next time we're going to schedule more time. But the O'Hare Airport incident.
Which was November... Here we're coming up on another anniversary. It was November the 7th, about 4:20 in the afternoon, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at Gate C-17.
Okay,
I think you were at.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but the picture that I have with the clouds, and that's all you see, and this great big hole in the cloud, that is from the one that's, if anybody clicks your link, they'll see these different pictures going across, and there's one with just a cloud, and you can see an airplane, and that should give you an idea of the size, because the airplane is itty-bitty, and there is this massive circular hole through the cloud cover. Okay, please proceed with O'Hare. I just wanted to have a point of reference for people who are looking at that, looking at the pictures that I posted up there on your link, and when they look at that, now they'll know what this is about. So please proceed.
Well, at Gate C-17, around 4:20 in the afternoon, there was a plane that was going to be pushed back to leave for, Cincinnati now, I forget. Now, see, if I had this primed, I would have had it. Sorry about that. But
please don't apologize.
But anyways, two pilot, co-pilot there, some ramp rats, which are the gentlemen or individuals that are taking, loading up the luggage, are coming in and out, and all of a sudden they see this object below the ceiling of clouds. By the way, the ceiling was solid, some 1,900 feet up and good 6,000 feet beyond that or more,
mm-hmm.
a solid layer of clouds. We had overcast.
Mm-hmm. We here in the Midwest are very familiar with a solid layer of clouds, aren't we?
Yep, we get that overcast. We know what it is, and sometimes we get it for months straight.
Exactly.
And we start, running around and acting crazy in the house and depressed. That's horrible. But, you know, they were saying that this object that was sitting about 400 feet below it was a lenticular cloud. But the people who were observing it were very concerned. They knew it was a lenticular cloud. It seemed to be moving in a counterclockwise rotation. It looked like a football smash, like a squished football. So unlike a perfectly thin disc, it was... it seemed to have some girth to it. And
mm-hmm.
it was similar in coloration to the... sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
The color is very similar to the clouds, the cloud ceiling itself. But what had happened was they reported it to the managers and to the foreman and everybody else to say, you know, hey, there's something on going on up there. So they come down, take a peek at it. Everybody comes out looking at it, and there's all sorts of chatter on the walkie-talkies, the radio, etc. And before you know it, everybody's out there looking at this thing. From
mm-hmm.
the B concourse, further down, say 17 or 18 beyond that to the higher numbers, they were able to very good look at it because now they're looking at an angle that would give them a true insight as if this thing were below the ceiling. If this
right.
thing is actually, if you're looking directly below it, you don't
right.
know how low it is or where it's at, you know, its altitude. Well, that
right.
gave
and
them
for
a,
people yeah. outside of the state of Illinois who don't fly in and out of O'Hare, the concourses you're talking about it's the United Terminal, which is a terminal
correct.
All onto itself
correct.
At O'Hare Airport. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I interviewed four or five witnesses, but my first witness that I interviewed seen it coming in on Mannheim Road. It was that obvious. She's seen it below the layer of clouds, the overcast. She's seen it sitting there. Sitting next to her was a friend of hers who was a doctor from Bulgaria. And they were coming in to pick up a friend of theirs at the international area. And this person coming in actually was stopped and asked if he's seen anything when he got off the plane. And he was a pilot, by the way, for a competing airlines. And they asked him if he'd seen anything, and he had no idea what they were talking about. He was the one who encouraged her to come forward on the incident and what she's seen because she had a very good background in aviation. She was a military brat. She was raised on multiple bases. Her father was a captain of a air wing for the Navy. And she
right.
knew pretty much everything conventional that flew. In fact, in her description of everything, it was very detailed. It was very correct as far as the jargon and everything. But,
right.
You know,
and pilots, by pilots can't, or they're not, I shouldn't say the word can't, but they are not supposed to say anything about anything that they see in the sky for fear of losing their job. Is that correct?
Well, I'm trying to think of the year. I think it was 2008. we had a presentation up at Harper College at the Wojcik Center there. And
okay.
This woman was during a very bad snowstorm. This woman took a taxi. She was 90-some years old. She took the taxi there. She got there, and she made it a point. This was the second or third time I had met her at one of our events, but really didn't know her background. Very sharp woman, very sharp. She came to me and sat down next to me, and she goes, "Do you know I was a nurse for?" And she named the airlines. And she says, "Do you know why pilots don't want to talk about this stuff or make these reports?" I go, "Ridicule and sarcasm." She goes, "That's one thing." I says, she goes, "Do you know what they put them through afterwards?" She goes, "Well, I do because I was a part of it. I had to give the exams and have to do all this stuff." And if you have those incident reports of citing something, that's like a red mark on your performance. So the thing
right.
is, you don't want this luggage. In fact, it keeps bringing me back to the movie Close Encounters, where there is an incident. You have an ATC, an air traffic controller, multiple ones, and they're actually picking something up on the radar. It's clearly being painted on the radar. You have the knowns on there, and you have this unknown moving around and disappearing, coming back, et cetera, et cetera. And it reminded me so much of the 1952 incident in Washington, D.C. So here, they're asking the pilots, "Do you want to file a report?" "No." Do you want to file an incident report?" "No." "Let's forget about that." You know, both of them, all of them, you know, two
right,
planes.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
So
that is probably the reason why, you know, the pilot had asked this this passenger to report it, you know, rather than say, "Oh, no, I didn't
sure.
see anything." I mean, rather than say, "No, you're crazy," or whatever, because perhaps he did see, but because of what he would be subject to if he did, that he just encouraged her to go forward. And now, how long was this craft hovering above, like, O'Hare?
20 minutes, approximately.
20 minutes. And then what happened?
And then, as she was standing out there with her friend on the in the International Concourse parking lot, she says, "I'm looking around. I'm seeing groups of people everywhere," independently seeing this. She didn't even point it out. They were watching it. And the reason why, by the way, he encouraged her to come forward is because she knew people were taking pictures. She was
right.
trying to get people to come forward with pictures and video.
Got it.
And that was what they were trying to encourage. The she states that, you know, all of a sudden, while she's trying to figure out this composition, which I really enjoyed listening to her, trying to figure out the composition. That's how detailed this person was.
Right.
And she says, in an instant, at a very, very steep angle, nearly straight up, it shot right through the ceiling of clouds, leaving a gaping blue hole all the way to the blue sky above. Instantaneously. So,
now, that's the picture that I got off of the Illinois MUFON site that I posted on your link, and you want to talk about a gaping hole in the cloud cover, because you can just barely, in the sky, see an airplane. So the airplane, compared to the big gaping hole above it, just blows my mind.
Well,
that was a big craft.
I don't know what even that image is. I forget. But I don't know how many photos there were. It's when we were doing the analysis, and again, we were working under that case was under NARCAP, the National Aviation Reporting Center for Anomalous Phenomena, under the direction of Dr. Richard Haynes,
okay.
Who worked on some 3,000, I think, incidences pertaining to aviation, military, and civilian aviation with unidentified aerial phenomena. Now, under his direction, you know, he's the boss and telling us what to do, what not to do, what to gather, what's relevant, what's not relevant. He was very precise, and he is just one dynamic man, I think, the world of him, and the organization. I think they're the finest when it comes to working on aviation, you know, cases. The thing is, it's a different protocol. You really have to be very versed in the subject matter of aviation. The other thing is, you have to maintain anonymity for these people. You can't divulge information. You have to watch how you gather your data and how you put it out to the public too.
Right.
I mean,
well, that brings up something else that I wanted to go over with you, because the investigators are not going out there going, yep, we believe in UFOs, and yep, that's what this is. They're going out there with a mind to disprove, you know, gathering the data, trying to not necessarily prove that it's a UFO or something along that line, but everything, they have to rule out every other possible, you know, astrological or astronomical or, you know, whatever, before that they can definitively say, you know, this is something that's unknown. And you have to go through a lot of training to become an investigator. And I know that MUFON is looking for investigators, and you do classes and things like that, whether you go through a local MUFON chapter or you go through MUFON International. And the MUFON International, you can find that online at MUFON.com, MUFON.com. And from there, you can learn how to become an investigator if that's something that intrigues you. But it is a lot of scientific information that an investigator has to have in their tool belt before they can be let loose on John Q. Public, right? And I would highly recommend people who have interest in this to actually join MUFON and join the local chapter and go to meetings. You know, I think meetings are once a month for local chapters. Membership is like $20 for an individual and $25 for family membership. But what's really cool about MUFON is that any donation you appreciate. So, because you don't receive any financial support from international or any other organization, and the members, you know, are it's up to, you know, the money that you raise through the speaking engagements, through, you know, this, that, and the other thing, like the annual conferences that support the research that the researchers do. You're not getting money from, you know, Donald Trump isn't handing you over $1 million and saying, here, go buy some cool equipment, you know. That would be cool. You know, so that I think is another important thing. And it's not run by any government organization. It's run by people who have a true interest in the phenomena. And whether or not, you know, the age-old question of are we alone in the universe or not. And I'm happy to be a part of the local chapter. You know, I'm a part of MUFON, just joined last month, in fact. I learned so much at your annual meeting, having moved to Rockford only 2 years ago. I never knew about the Rockford lights. So that was something new for me to learn, and how much activity is out here in Rockford. And when you and I spoke a couple weeks ago over the phone, you were telling me that there's a lot of activity out in Rockford. And I went online and I found a map, and I honest to God cannot remember the location of where I found this map, but you can go and Google, and maybe you know the web place to go, but I found it via Google of and it came up with maps of where there had been mass sightings of UFOs, and then you can just click your state and you can see where in fact they are. And the red lights was not too far from where I live, so I would have, if I had lived here back in 1999, New Year's Eve for 2000, I would have seen it, but I didn't, so I didn't. But I think it's important. I think the work that you guys do is important. A part of MUFON also, or Hangar One, new TV show on, is it A&E or History Channel?
The History Channel. It's the History Channel.
All right. So Hangar One is about the MUFON files.
Right.
And some of the cases that you guys are now allowed to disclose information on. And you've had, what, one season so far?
I think it's the third season.
It's the third season?
Second season, I think. Second.
Boy, am I misinformed, because I watch it. So you are, yeah. You're just starting your second season?
This will be the third season.
Okay.
Well, then,
yeah.
It's second.
Well, that's me too. You know,
we're on H2, and then
yeah.
All
right, so it's on H2. I see Richard Dolan a lot on there.
Yeah, Rich is on. He's shot, I don't know how many episodes. I haven't been on there, but two of my cases have been on there.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see you. You should be on there.
I'm not pretty enough for the show, I guess. I don't know.
Oh,
but,
stop.
That's all right.
Stop,
I've been
stop,
on
stop.
Enough shows.
Don't talk about my friend like that. I don't like that. You know? But Richard Dolan is an author, and about UFO phenomena, and you introduced me to Richard years ago, and he was a guest on the show when his first book was coming out, and I think he started out as a skeptic and started doing research. Is that, I have that story backwards?
He found it interesting because he's actually in the story. His background's history. And Cold War history is his expertise. He's also a Rhodes Scholar finalist. You know, this guy is pretty smart.
Right.
And in looking and researching, he was going to do a paper. He did a paper, and it ended up being his first book. He was looking at the national security element when it comes to this, you know. So UFOs
right.
in the national state were something that worked hand in hand. And people just, you know, they think, well, this is all nonsense. Really? Then why is it a matter of national security? You don't put something that is nonsense into a category that high. It has reached the highest levels and beyond anything in,
sure.
in security. So.
Right.
What is it or why is it? You know, so well, it's our technology. No, it's not our technology, because we engage these things. It's not Russian technology. We have a pedigree, a history of the phenomena that goes back through the whole human account, and it's written in every type of literature, religious accounts, etc. This stuff
exactly.
is been around forever.
Right. Exactly.
Long before the Wright brothers were flying.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. You know, and we are down to our final 10 seconds, Sam. I want to thank you
oh,
so much
God.
For your time. Yeah, I know. Next time I want to do 90 minutes with you, if that's all right, because there's a lot of information to cover. And so people can contact you how?
They can contact me at MUFON Sam. Oh, the cat just darn near killed himself. MUFONSAM at Comcast.net. Go to MyMUFON.com. MyMUFON.com. That is our state site. And if, please join international at www.MUFON.com.
Right, exactly. And thank you so much for your time. It is always
so much
fun talking with you. I learn so much. And I'm a firm believer, if I don't learn something every day, then I'm wasted a day. So this has been a very enlightening phone conversation, and I really can't wait to have you on again. And I thank you very much for your time. Give my love to Julie, if you would, please.
Same there. Okay, you take care. I'll see you.
All right, thank you. All right, bye-bye, Sam. All right, and that is it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Sam Maranto of MUFON. And again, the Illinois State Director of MUFON, as well as an investigative researcher. Perhaps next time we will get into some what it takes to be an investigative researcher. But do check out mymufon.com as well as MUFON.com. Till next time, thanks so much. Have a great rest of your week.